The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by DDP Yoga. Working hundreds of matches over the years, it ain't no surprise that my body's taking its share of bumps and bruises. Well, my buddy Diamond Dallas Page knows all about the wear and tear the ring takes on your body, and his DDP Yoga fitness system was specifically designed to burn fat, reduce pain, and heal up from injuries. Dallas is so positive that you'll absolutely love the DDPY program and using the DDPY app that he's doing something he ain't never done before. He's going to give you 7 days free to try it out. That's a week to try the program. Explore the app and own your life, and it's completely free. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, weights, and fitness levels. It's a kick-ass cardio workout that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like never before, all with minimal joint impact. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you can save 20% off an annual membership for the DDP Yoga Now app off any DVD pack. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get started. And hey, check this out. Dallas will be at the Motor City Comic Con in Novi, Michigan. He'll be appearing all 3 days, Friday through Sunday, May 18th, 19th, and 20th. Come down, get an autograph, take a picture, meet and interact with Dallas at the Motor City Comic Con. You can get details and ticket info at MotorCityComicCon.com. And for those of you in the UK, you can catch DDP in person this weekend at the Wales Comic Con, April 21st and April 22nd. Details and tickets or at WalesComicCon.com.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting here at my desk at 316 Gimmick Street, and I got a desk cluttered full of all kinds of bullshit. I got a couple of antlers from some white-tailed deer I took over the years. I got a laptop, computer. I got my sound bag, all my podcast and equipment. Stuff I'm fixing to take with me as me and my wife, Mula and Callie, head down to Nevada to the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0 for a little vacation time. Son of a bitch, I've been waiting for this day for a long time. We got some stuff on the back end of this, going to cut our vacation short by several days, but nonetheless. Got all my stuff over here. Mula was over here letting me scratch her back. Callie, my black lab, she's got this little habit where she goes and gets into the hot tub, which is connected to the swimming pool, and goes in there and swims around a little bit. And now that she's older, she's 1 year and almost 2 months, she knows that she must stop at the back door and let me dry her off before she comes inside. Her little ass has been in that damn hot tub 3 times today. It ain't even hot here in Marina Del Rey. That damn dog just loves the water. She loves to swim. She's sitting there. Hang on, let me let her in. She's sitting here. I'm in my office. We've got these doors that go out there. My wife's out there watering the damn lawn. Come on in, Callie. Come on in. How's the grass doing, honey? It's growing. Lawn guys come tomorrow. That's a Wednesday. Hey, man, we're getting ready to take off and get out of here. We're going to fly up there to Nevada. I think we're taking a King Air 350 on the way up there this time. And normally we take a light jet. Well, not normally. Sometimes we take a light jet. So I'm looking forward to getting on the King Air 350. It's a turboprop twin. So it's supposed to have a lot of room in them. Hopefully they do get a lot of room in them because I got a bunch of junk I'm trying to take up there and get out of here. What you got?
More importantly, how are my vegetable plants?
Oh, man, my wife got a little vegetable garden going over here. It's about a foot and a half long. What all you got in there?
Tomatoes.
Green bell peppers.
Zucchini.
And zucchini. God dang, it started storming over here. The wind damn near blew your zucchini out of the damn thing. We got to replant those things.
Yeah, I had to put them in the garage.
Are we going to spray them? Are the bugs eating them?
Nope, bugs don't bother.
Okay, do you want to take that with us to the ranch tomorrow so you can transplant them over the garden over there?
Nope, I'm going to plant my own garden up there.
Oh, so you're going to start a whole nother one?
Yep.
So am I going to go to the hardware and get a store and get a tiller for you?
Yep.
All right, you heard it here first. The green thumb of the family, my wife, my illustrious wife, Kristen, every year it's the same old shit. She gets all these little containers, she puts them out on the front sidewalk, and I got to water them damn near every single day, and we eat the vegetables accordingly, nonetheless. Oh, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to getting down to Nevada. The local dirt bike store over there that works on stuff has got my 2008 KLX 450. I bought that dirt bike brand new in 2008, about six, 8-9 months after I bought the Broken Skull Ranch down there in South Texas. 2008 is the year they stopped making the KLX 450. So that is one of the last ones to roll off the assembly line. And because I'm always in Los Angeles and that dirt bike was always there in South Texas sitting in my barn on a trickle charger, or sometimes it wasn't sitting on a trickle charger, and because there are so many thorns out there, it made it a pain in the ass to ride. I'll swear to God, that KLX 450 2008 model has less than 3 hours running time on it. The sumbitch is like brand new. So anyway, I took it over to the motorcycle shop. And the guy said, "Man, Steve, for a guy your size, this spring in the back is way too soft." Because normally, most of you motocross riders, and mine's kind of like, it's kind of like an enduro bike, KLX, but it's still a hot bike, four-stroke. And he goes, "You know, most of the motocross riders, man, those guys are weighing, you know, $140 to $170, whatever. There might be some out of that weight range, but most of those guys, and Jesus Christ, they can ride the shit out of those bikes. They're not weighing 250, 260 like yours truly. So we're going to put a heavier spring in there. They've got it all ready for me to sit on it, adjust the sag on it, and I will be ready to tear up the BLM. Well, I'm not even going to say I'm going to tear it up. I'm going to go out there and just try to get my riding chops back. I've been riding motorcycles. I think I got my first dirt bike in 78, 76, about 76, 78. It was a Kawasaki KE100. It was an on and off bike. The turn signals had been stripped off of it. Me and my brother Kevin used to ride the shit out of it. Second gear was out. You went from first to third. And man, it was an interesting piece of machinery. So I'm going to blaze the BLM this year, the Bureau of Land Management, all that public land out there I've been telling you guys about. It's one of the reasons we moved out there or got a place in Nevada. You got so many options to ride. I'm going to gas up my mule. I'm going to put a couple hundred miles on that thing. I'm going to put a couple hundred miles on my Brute Force 750, my four-wheeler. And I'm going to take my dirt bike out there. And there's this little area, one of the staging areas I ride at. I just kind of tool around. I'm going to take it easy out there. I saw the way the track's laid out. So that'll be a way for me to kind of refamiliarize myself and get back into the dirt bike mode. I'm not looking to go too fast or jump too far or do any kind of crazy shit. I can't ride a wheelie to save my life either. I don't even mess with that stuff, but I'm excited about getting some of my toys back and get them back in the dirt where they're supposed to be. And other than that, that's all I got. We're heading to Nevada and I'm going to spend a couple of days there. We got all of our services turned on, so we ain't got to sit there and try to, you know, run errands, buy furniture, do all this other shit. We're finally going to get a chance to go out there and just relax and kind of enjoy being out there in the outdoors. The weather's been good. Been getting a little bit of rain, but I think it's supposed to be in the mid-70s when we get there. And hell, my brother-in-law, right there outside of Reno in Sparks, he got snow the other day, and he got hail the other day. So I'm still trying to learn the weather patterns of Nevada. It's been a real cluster because I'm used to the heat and hot bullshit of sitting in a deer stand in South Texas. Ted Fowler knows what I'm talking about. 90, 95 degrees in the late part of December. And then out here in Southern California, Marina Del Rey, 1 mile from the water, hell, it's 65, 70 degrees damn near year round. So I'm used to all this stuff. I didn't turn into a weather sissy. Still trying to learn about the Nevada weather and all that other bullshit. But I tell you what, I'm going to bust out all my gear. I got my helmet, my goggles, I got my pads, I got my knee pads. I'm going to take my motorcycle boots. I've had some motocross boots for, 10 years. I ain't never worn them while I've been on that motorcycle, but I'm going to wear them this time. I'm going to get out there and just tear shit up. But anyway, man, I'll tell you what. Today's podcast is going to be part two of the podcast you heard on Tuesday. Andy Williams, from Every Time I Die, comes by the house. My producer, Sean Merrick, came by the house to record this session. And Braxton Sutter, from Impact Wrestling, and his wife, Allie, came by. And we just sit there and shoot the breeze over at 317 Gimmick Street. And it's always fun when I get a chance to talk to people from the business of pro wrestling. But it's really fun to talk to people who also come from the world of music because I'm such a big fan of music. And then the fact that Braxton, or Jesse, and his wife Allie was able to join in was really cool, man. I talk to anybody I want to, but I like to talk to people that come from the world of wrestling and music. So it's a great conversation, a lot of ribs going on, lots of laughs, and Andy's probably getting ready to spin up and go on the road with Every Time I Die. If you get a chance, get on their website, find out where they're playing. I've been watching a bunch of videos. Hell of a band. Good dude, funny dude, salt of the earth kind of guy. Same thing with Jesse and Allie, just good folks. So I think you're going to enjoy the part two of the conversation. And as I tell Andy, he can take the windows or he can take the stairs. But before we get to part two of my conversation with Andy from Every Time I Die and Braxton and Allie from Impact Wrestling, why don't you take a minute and save some money on your car insurance? Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
The hit true crime series, Murder Made Me Famous, is now on Podcast One, showcasing some of the most notorious crimes imaginable, including Scott Peterson, Jody Arias, Ted Bundy, and more. See how murder made them famous. New episodes starting every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, as well as PodcastOne.com and the Podcast One app. And check out the new season of Murder Made Me Famous, starting Saturday, April 14th on The Reels channel.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
I was reading that one of your first matches that you saw was the infamous scaffold match between, was it the Midnights and the Road Warriors?
And the Road Warriors, yeah. Oh,
yeah. And Cornette takes the ball and blows out both wheels.
Yeah. I'm glad you're talking about this. I earlier we were talking about someone shitting on someone or whatever like that during one of your podcasts. I don't understand Corny's hate with wrestling nowadays, like with indie wrestling and like how it's at. The first match I ever watched on paper, if you wrote it down, I watched two men wearing dancing tights, wearing face paint, with a man with a mullet and a bald like head, Paul Ellering, wrestle two out of shape dudes in dancing tights with a man wearing a suit holding a tennis racket on a scaffold above a wrestling ring. That's written out on paper. Where is that wrestling? Where is wrestling any of that? But that match, I'm sitting here today because I watched that match and I loved that match. That was not wrestling. You know what I mean?
But well, it was a gimmick match because of the story had escalated to, you know, that culmination.
Which is great.
But that was, because it was Beautiful Bobby. Was that Sweet Stan or was that Loverboy?
That was Sweet Stan at that time.
So Loverboy, Dennis Condrey.
Was it Dennis?
Yeah, but when you say those guys are out of shape, they just weren't body guys. Two guys. That team is one of my favorite teams of all time.
As a child, Beautiful Bobby is like one of my all-time favorites.
Dude, he is so underrated. People don't understand. Amazing. You watch that guy in the ring, and same thing with Dennis Condrey, but Bobby kind of took it to a different level. The way he would implement the second rope on some of his things, his jumps or his feeds, then over the top. He was just – and the thing about Bobby was – he was one of those kind of guys that, you know, you'll ask a lot of guys, like Gorgeous Gary Young was real helpful to me coming up. Matt Bourne, guys that could really explain stuff. And sometimes you talk to Bobby, and I'd say, hey, Bobby, I said, man, why did you do this when you do it? Why did you do this when you did it? He goes, oh, well, I don't know. He was just like, because he's the sweetest dude in the world, just pure instincts. He might not necessarily explain what he did, but he just knew how and what to do.
That's awesome.
Talking about that scaffold match.
He's a natural.
But like, we had a scaffold match a few years after that. I think it was 1992, 3, whatever.
Yeah.
Dave Meltzer called it the worst match of the year. It was me. Who was my partner? Was it me and Terry Taylor against PN News and Bobby Eaton? Was being news Bobby
Eaton against Terry Taylor?
And yeah, so anyway, we got to go get these flags.
Like
dude wanted a scaffold.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It was a rib because they brought the wrong tubing for the scaffold.
Oh,
the tubing on
God.
The bottom was this big around.
Yeah.
And so you couldn't hang from it or suspend yourself from it. So we're locked on top of that damn thing. I'm afraid of heights. Now, that's not tall enough to be afraid. When you're walking on a narrow platform and one of the dudes weighs 350,
it's
four alarms.
Yeah,
love land.
Yeah.
So, and anyway, we stunk the joint out and it was just absolutely brutal because I remember that match and they had a cool name to that, Night of the Skywalkers.
Yeah.
This was Night of the Cluster. It was the drizzling shit.
But like it's a gimmick match, but like scaffold, like there's nothing you can really do.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
building to that big bump at the end, and that's it.
You might take one, you like go for a pile drive, something, you know, reverse to the backdrop. But I mean, other than that, you don't want to do nothing stupid.
Even that scares me. Like, but I'd say, like, in that context, it's not wrestling. It's not what, like,
oh, no.
You know what I mean? And, like, that was another thing. It was like, but it was an amazing, that was an amazing thing to watch when I was like 9, 10 years old. I was like, oh my God.
I've never seen anything like it before.
Even when I was a kid, like you coming down to the ring in a beer truck and hosing down the beer, like the ring. Like,
oh, it was amazing.
Looking back on it's like one of the best moments in wrestling history. But it's not wrestling. You know what I mean? It's not technically wrestling. You know what I mean?
But to me, I mean, it's like, you know, the stories and the characters. I mean, you got to tell stories.
Of course. Absolutely.
So, like, if you can pay it off with a good match on top of that, well, that's great. But in the process of the feud, man, especially when you do all the crazy shit that we used to do. And like they're doing a lot of cool stuff with Braun.
Of course.
You know, turning shit over and all this other stuff. So,
which is great. It's just like that's – I never understood Corny's, like, hate for things that are happening now. And he can't even watch a Kenny Omega match – because he just is already colored by like something weird that he did in the past.
Man,
you know?
I can't speak to that because I'm not Jimmy, but for some reason, he just kind of has it out for Kenny Omega.
If you can't watch Jericho and Omega and just be happy about it, like that people are talking about pro wrestling, you know what I mean? Yeah. In general, outside of
wrestling. With the way the business is these days, I mean, if back in the Attitude era, not just talking about Meyer, but that was, you know, both companies were doing outstanding numbers.
Yeah.
Then you look at the total number now done by one company.
Yeah.
You know, if there's more people talking about wrestling because
it's awesome.
Of the match, you know, I think that's a good thing for the business.
It's a good thing.
I mean, you guys, man, I want all the guys and girls to make as much money as possible and be gainfully employed.
Yeah. That's we kind of talked about earlier a little bit, but like you were saying, like when I went to wrestling school in 99, and that was during the Attitude Era and the WCW, WWF, Monday Night Wars. Like that, I mean, like they said that the business was booming. And like now, I mean, you know, I've been through it. Then there was a drought, and like now it's back. You know what I mean? There's just it's not just WWE. There's Ring of Honor, and there's
you can make a living
progress.
On the indies. Like you can make an actual living if you hustle hard enough.
Yeah,
that's what I've heard.
There's just a lot. You know, there's just more wrestling out there, and it's great for everybody.
Yeah.
Man, well, hold on. You guys with Impact, right?
Yeah.
Now, didn't Don Callis just take that over?
Yep.
Yeah.
How's that going? Because Don was going to come down and be on the podcast, but we got all tangled up when New Japan came down to do the Long Beach show, so I didn't get a chance to talk to him.
He's hilarious.
He's
cool.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
He's cool.
He's great.
What's the vibe down there? Did it change from previous regime?
Yes. It definitely, I would say it changed. I feel like people are more confident in the direction that things are going now, for sure.
Yeah.
It's absolutely.
Like, we get asked that question a lot, like, I feel like it's always been a chill atmosphere there. Everybody says that.
It's always been that good. Like, I remember the first time I went there, I knew right away that I felt at home with, like, the locker room and everybody. But I think, like, you know, there was fear, obviously, for a little while, and we didn't know what the hell was going on. Like, it's scary to not know what's going on. And now I feel like we're a lot more, at least I can say for myself, I'm a lot more confident with how things are and where everything's going. So in that respect, it's changed. But the locker room and the atmosphere has always been like chilled, a little bit more laid back. Everyone's having a good time.
Yeah.
Like I've never, I mean, obviously I feel pressure before television, obviously television, but it's never been like a negative feeling there. Like I always see dirt sheets are talking about like the
bad morale.
Oh, bad morale. I remember one time there was this, they were saying, oh, it's so terrible backstage. And we were all back there playing Frisbee and throwing a football, like laughing. And I'm going, How do people think this is
the one? Like when we first got there, that was the big thing on the internet, was that there was like bad morale backstage at TNA Impact at the time. And they did a spot. I wanted like it was like Explosion or One Night Only, like one of the smaller shows. Earl Hebner did a spot. Like he did like a Ric Flair spot with one of the girls, kissed one of the girls, did like a Flair strut, took a Ric Flair bump, like the whole back by the monitor. Everybody was like rolling,
we were
like
laughing,
dying. And Shimer Shane Helms like grabbing, and he was like, bad morale, huh? Bad morale. And I was this is awesome.
And like, you know, or like we have matches, like we come to the back, people stand around the monitor, everyone's clapping and, you know, good job, way to go. And it's like, it's a good atmosphere in that respect for sure.
Man, God dang, Hebner and me go way back. He's one of my favorite referees. And when I was working in the garden, I want to ask you about the women's division, but I got to get this story, so we're talking about Hebner. So I'm working in Madison Square Garden. It's a Highway to Hell match. Me and Undertaker.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a part where, you know, he's going to go for a backdrop. I'm going to kick him. He's going to stand up and no sell it. Well, when he brings his big ass head up,
right in the chin,
he
right?
hits me right in the damn chin. I've never been knocked out in my life. I go down in the garden. There's 20,000 people there.
Insane,
we're on pay per view. And I'm laying there in the middle of the ring, like, the damn lights. Hebner comes up to me. He goes, God damn it, boy, you all right? I looked at Earl. I said, where are we? He goes, God damn, boy, we're in the garden.
I don't remember the rest of the match. I do remember laying down on that announce table because we had talked about a Taker dropping that leg off the top turnbuckle on me.
God.
And all of a sudden he places me on the table. I'm like, shit, I guess he's coming.
We're still doing that.
There, this dude 6'10", 320, about to drop a leg going. Just like, that was cool. But the match sucked because I got knocked out. But back to you, the women's division over there. How many women do y'all have over there? Because it's really running strong in WWE and has been for quite some time. You got to be proud if you're a 14-year veteran to see how much the women's game has come up.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Right now, in our locker room, like me and the other girls, the other knockouts talk about this all the time. Like we're all really, really close. It's like a really tight-knit locker room, and we're all very driven to perform at our absolute best, you know, because – I feel like as women, especially in the business, it's so important that we show that we can go and we can work. And I feel like the locker room we have now, like we all just want to be the best, you know? And Gail Kim recently retired.
She's awesome.
She's helped me personally so much over the last like couple of years. But like I was saying before, like she helps with the knockouts matches and she produces and all that stuff. And I mean, she pushes all of us to like, we can't go out there and have like a little basic match. It's like, you know, you have to bring your A game every single time. So
what kind of time are they giving y'all?
So when I was first there, we weren't getting a lot of time, like maybe like 6 minutes. But now, I mean, me and Laurel Van Ness, Chelsea Green, we just did a 15-minute match on Impact, you know? So we're definitely, getting time now and commercial breaks and all those things that
things that detach my ass sometimes when I'm watching a match and go to a commercial break or maybe even two is the fact that bing, bang, boom, they'll go out there for just a pretty, you know, 2-3 minutes, set the hook, and it'll be a double down, someone that gets shit canned, take a powder, get knocked over the top rope, and it's like, dude, here's a commercial, and then boom, here comes the announcer covering the fact, hey, we're coming back, and it's like, it's so formulaic. It's man.
It really is. Yeah. But that's, again, when I talk about, like, Gail, like, she's so big on, like I said, everything being really creative.
Being detailed. Yes. So it's like there's not that red herring that says, we're going to.
She always says.
And that's guys and gals. Absolutely. I'm just talking about the business in general.
Absolutely. But she always says, like, you know, and we got to do something different. Like, we're not doing that. Try doing this. Like, you need to think about this. Think about what else you could do. You know, and it like forces us to do things differently and kind of change the formula.
Did y'all ever, as young as you are, but you're a big WWF fan, but you watched some NWA as well. You ever watched Mid-South Power, Mid-South, Bill Watts?
Yeah.
Dude, when that show used to go off the air, I mean, it'd be a melee or a Pier 6 brawl. And Jim or Michael PSAs was already doing some color commentary at that time. But, I mean, they'd go off the air, you know, right with the match still in progress.
Yeah,
we'll bring it back to you next week.
Yeah.
And then you start the next week off with super the conclusion smart. Of the shit that they did, a Republican pitchers. Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Super smart.
God damn, that was good shit because it was so spontaneous and quote unquote, I use these finger quotes. You can't see me do it on the podcast, but they can.
Yeah.
And I'm going to rake your ass. But man, they bring that shit back the next week. Yeah. It's like, man, you know, I'm buying it.
Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise goes, does Mission Impossible. I know we ain't kicking all that ass.
Yeah.
You got about 5 stunt doubles that look just like him,
but
you're buying in. So I can still buy into any product today as long as it's good and they portray it or transmit it as being real to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like storytelling is, I mean, that's what hooked me in wrestling when I was a kid was the stories, the characters, like why.
Angles.
Like matches are great and I appreciate good matches, of course. But, you know, when there's a really good storyline and you can get behind a character or you can like really love a character and really hate another character, I feel like that's what hooks people. At least that's what hooks me.
You have reason to care.
Did you get to see Tommaso and Gargano from NXT TakeOver?
No, but I love those guys as a tag team when they were doing all that stuff with Revival.
Yeah.
Did they knock it out?
Yeah. Like
I'll check it out. You're talking about from this recent one?
Yeah. But same, like we were just talking about, like that, like, you know, I teach some of the young guys in Buffalo and it's like, yeah, they had like this amazing like storytelling match, but you got to remember that they had probably almost a year build up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Promos and angles and it's
The climax was
amazing.
That one, Jesus Christ, I'm going back about 6 months ago, or maybe four, when they started setting that hook, when Tommaso turned on.
Yeah, after the ladder match. Yeah.
No, Ciampa turned on Gargano.
Yes.
Gargano. I'm talking about the same guy.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, Tommaso. Jesus Christ. I think I pissed him off because I keep pronouncing his name wrong. When he turned on Gargano, I mean, it was just like, oh, man, you piece of trash.
Yeah, I dug it.
And they had good chemistry as a tag team, so I was really intrigued, and now it's split.
Yeah.
So I got to go back and watch that. I didn't see that, but did y'all see 34?
34.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 34.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still sick from it.
Oh,
it just happened a few days ago. Okay. Yeah. Did you see WrestleMania 34?
Yeah, we watched WrestleMania 34.
It was the 34th WrestleMania that they've had since inception.
Is that what it was?
What did you think about WrestleMania 34 in the Silver Dome?
I personally enjoyed WrestleMania 34.
I'm messing with you, Jesse.
The girls match. Oh, my gosh. Like, Charlotte and Asuka, like. Oh, that match was awesome. Yeah, I was down in NOLA and we ended up watching it at a bar, but oh my gosh, it was awesome.
They crushed it.
They did. Yeah. They really crushed
it. I like Charlotte. Well, first of all, I love Charlotte, but I like her as a heel so much better. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like this was necessarily a heel baby match. This was just a competitive match because I like her as a heel as far as her mannerisms and all her swagger and just how she presents herself. But man, that match with the aggressiveness of Asuka and, you know, like, you know, this. Charlotte's so statuesque and athletic.
Yeah.
There was no – one of my big pet peeves is now with the way the business has really sped up, and it's not an indictment on the business, but you have to do it well, like Copperfield. You know, you don't want to see the damn, you know, rabbit, you know, stuffed in the hat before it pulls it out, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to see a high spot happen before – you know, I would say, okay, here's that spot.
Yeah.
I want to see it spontaneous happen so I can't – and there was none of that in there.
Yeah.
And so it was all shit and get, and the intensity level was high. And it was a very aggressive match, not real long, but they didn't rush through anything, but the intensity factor was off the chart. And actually, you know, they were competing for that damn belt.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal.
I liked that
at the finish was, I mean, literally Charlotte just hooked on the figure eight and she tapped.
And she but I mean, she really jacked up, she really snugged up.
She didn't go to it like six times, you know what I mean? Like everybody was expecting.
Yeah, I love the little where she kept her arm in.
Yeah, super cool.
I'm still a little torn on whether I want him to hug afterwards because I want to keep the animosity. But I've already talked about this three podcasts in a row, but since we've got a bunch of wrestlers in here.
Oh, sorry.
First thing about the Ronda Rousey match.
It was great.
I thought it was spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, it was to feature her.
Yes.
And she did a spectacular job in the story that they set. And, like, I was sitting there watching the match at the bottom of a hotel with Shane Helms. Drinking fireball shots.
Yeah,
he loves your Boogeyman. Yeah. And when Boogeyman goes and offers, you know, orders a tray of, you know,
fireballs
and brings them back, I'm like, man, it's a Boogeyman. I'm going to drink a fireball or eat the earthworms.
Yeah, so I'm drinking
the fireballs.
Yeah.
But man, that match was so entertaining.
Yeah, it was.
Like, everybody was at Mania, so no one was downstairs. So it was really cool. There's probably like 20 civilians in there that didn't have nothing to do with the business.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, the guy hooked my computer up to the big screen like that one right there, and we were all watching like the whole bar. I mean, these people ain't wrestling fans.
Uh-huh.
But all of a sudden, when Asuka Charlotte got out there and when that match with Steph and Paul and
grabbed their
Ronda
attention.
Came out there, people were like cheering and popping and like getting into it. It was amazing.
I liked what you said though, was because I mean, like, I think that tag match with Ronda, like, they did a lot more than people expected them to.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, you thought it was gonna be the finish, and they just kept going, and it was awesome.
And like, this sounds, I don't know. I guess I just to see her come out, she had this genuine smile on her face, and it was like you could almost feel how happy and excited she was to be there. You know, I thought that was really
people
cool.
People are torn between that. They don't know if they want to see her smile.
Yeah.
I'm down with it because I thought it was a natural thing, just like you. I thought she was happy to be there.
Yeah.
And boy, if she was nervous, she sure didn't show it.
You got to remember, too, that that's almost triple the amount of people she's ever performed in front of live.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
You know, UFC doesn't, they draw, but they don't draw like that.
They don't draw like that, but also, I mean, she's in a world where, hey, man, if you and me are going to throw down, like we probably will, one of us is going to throw that window before you leave.
So we won't think about that.
We'll just do battle. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We're trading mano-a-mano. So, when you go out there in a work atmosphere, you know, and you got to remember some shit, and you get off page.
You know what's coming.
Because the moment was too big for you, things can go, you know, cattywampus on you. But she had composure. She had fire when she needed. Of course. Anytime you got Steph in there, it's amazing.
Of course.
And Paul, dude, when she got in there, started opening up on Paul.
Dude, that's my favorite
part.
It was great.
Paul takes such a good ass whooping to begin with.
The best,
and the fact that she was giving it to him, I popped.
That was like my favorite part of the match. I mean, Ronda was awesome, but my favorite part of the match was just the fact of how, I guess, like, you hear like so many stories about Triple H. I don't know the guy personally, so like I can't say anything, but like how humble he is to just do that. Once they went at it together and him to sell like that, it just shows how much of a professional he is.
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, he is humble, but he's a real smart guy, and he's a guy that's always been a student of the business. Of course. But, I mean, he knows what's gonna work to
of course
help get her over. You know, and he's getting over the process. I mean, you know, he's been working all these years.
Yeah.
I always liked working with Paul, but it was like I call most of my matches because I'm damn near deaf.
Uh-huh.
So when I get in Paul, because he's such a ring general, he'd start calling the match. Yeah. I'm like, guy, what's going on here? But, I mean, that's just him as an entertainer knowing, hey, man, this spot's going to get him.
Yeah.
And dude, you're all on the same team. If you're not working in that, I mean – what were they in, like the 3 or 4 spot? It was a sweet spot as far as that crowd goes.
Right in the middle.
And they were on full tank. You know, it wasn't half empty yet.
Yeah.
And so they went out there and rocked it.
Honestly,
they're just being smart.
Honestly, it was awesome. One of my favorite parts is me kind of being a mark, but Triple H, he kind of came in shape, didn't he?
He looked amazing.
He looked
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. He always does, man. Yeah.
That's the best he's looked in a long time.
He dials in and he trains. And they had a cool
Stephanie looked entrance. Fantastic, too. Oh, my gosh. She looked amazing.
Saw Lee Note.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they both looked great.
They work hard, man. Yeah. I dig it. What's
it? But look at that. I was going to change the conversation.
A little segue action.
Jesse's over going like, what are we doing? We're doing a podcast. Y'all do a podcast. Y'all tell me about y'all's podcast and how long you've been doing it, what you put it together, and what y'all 30, talking about.
Yeah, we do like 32 think we just shows
every
now.
Thursday, so today was 32, I believe.
How come y'all haven't asked me to be on it? Y'all can't carry a bum like me for an hour.
This is our first Los Angeles podcast.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
we got the rig.
Yeah, we do got the rig.
So tell me about how'd you guys hook up and say, hey, man, let's go do a podcast. Everybody else and their brother's doing one.
Yeah, like this is my thing with that. Like, because I listened to a lot of different podcasts. I like a lot of comedy podcasts. And it's kind of like the same thing as, like, wrestling, where if you think to yourself, like, oh, I'm going to start a podcast. Like, no, everybody does a podcast. It's like, you can't think that way. You know what I mean? It's like saying you want to be a wrestler and be like, oh, there's a lot of wrestlers out there. I don't think I could do that. No, you can't think that way. You know what I mean? It's almost like, you know, if you're in the entertainment business and you don't have a podcast, because anybody can do one, you're almost kind of an idiot if you don't. You know what I mean? Like, why not take advantage of that?
You should build your brand at any opportunity you can, absolutely.
Yeah, especially when you have the exposure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I feel like anytime you can let, and I mean, I guess, like, you know, because of, like, kayfabe and that stuff like that, anytime you can, like, for us in the band, you can, like, relate to the people who are listening to your music on a human level to, like, let them know that, like, I'm not Ozzy Osbourne. I'm not like this. I'm just a dude that lives in Buffalo and I play guitar and I got lucky. You know, like people happen to like the music I write and I get to go travel the world doing it. When they hear that, they want to hear that. They want to hear, now I'm not sure you've ever told a story like this or anything. They want to hear the fact that you've like shit your pants before. They want to know that like you know what I mean? Like you're not just eating caviar and stuff like that. And like, cause that only happens to a percentage of people. I don't even know if I've ever even had caviar in my life. But when you do like a podcast, it's like, oh, what did you do this week? Oh man, I had like 5 shows this week. And like this week, like I had a horrible, I ate something and it was bad. And you know,
got sick.
And I was sick and like blah, blah, blah. Like even though that sounds super mundane, people at home can go like, oh, okay, I get
that. Yeah, they can relate to it. You're more relatable.
Either that dude's just like me, or hey, here's what he does, and that's pretty cool. And to speaking to the point of shitting your pants, which I did in South Africa, the only reason I had shit my pants in South Africa is I'd loaded up on caviar before the match.
That's exactly it. That's what I'm saying.
I'm kidding you.
Yeah.
Did you shit your pants too?
I shit my pants all the time. It's awful.
Okay, hold on.
Hold on a second. You... Didn't you shit your pants on your birthday? Remember we all went to that restaurant?
Oh, yeah.
And he walked away and said he was on the phone for a while, but he actually shit his pants.
Listen. Mine was a one-off. Okay, we were doing an overseas travel, so the food is different.
Yeah,
so,
you're
just digesting stuff. Yoko slammed me, and Yoko slammed you.
Hey.
I mean, shit just flew out of my ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I looked up at Yoko. I said, Yoko, let's go home. He looks down and goes, okay, brah. We're home. So, but how do you make a habit of this?
I mean, I wouldn't say habit. But
you might not get your sphincter checked.
Maybe, yeah. Like,
you
might get
a drawstring put in.
When we stopped at Starbucks, I had a poop because if I don't, I'm gonna shit here.
We had that conversation at the hotel.
Yeah, I'm like, I might shit my pants while we're like talking. I'm a nervous dude. I'm like, I might be like 6'3" and 240, but I'm like a little chihuahua. Like, I shake a lot. Stuff like that, and I just get nervous and like.
That was your. That was your.
But I eat a lot too, so like that's a thing.
It was your 40th birthday at the.
It was my 40th birthday
at the sushi place,
and I didn't really want to go for sushi, but I was like trying to appease like my best friend Wes's girlfriend's vegan. She's vegan. My father like loves sushi, so I was like, all right, here we go. We'll just go get sushi, and I'm like eating it. And every single time I eat at this place, halfway through the meal, I have to like get up and go take shit. So.
Dude, you just got like a fast digestive system.
I think that might be it. Yeah. There's just no like turning. It's just one straight highway.
The best part was he came back to the table after like 20 minutes. He's like, well, you'll never guess who just called me.
And I believed him. I thought it was real. I was like, oh, that's so interesting.
And then the next day.
You know, he definitely
was. We podcasted the next day.
You actually shit in your pants.
I may have shit my pants.
I think he did.
But it was just like a shark.
Dude, I mean, when you're sitting there eating sushi and midway through the meal, you go out and shit an eel.
Yeah.
You got pretty fast.
There might be a chance, yeah. Like, nothing was swimming around, but, yeah.
On stage, as far as, you know, every time I die or just in the ring?
We have a bigger dude that we train with named Puff, and him and I wrestle. He did the Yokozuna drop to me, and, like, I was so scared, and the biggest, most ferocious fart came out. Like, one of those ones that, like, hurt shooting out, and I was like, I may have...
You probably would have made the circulation, like, next week. got pushed to the front of the line.
Yeah. Never in wrestling. That was the closest time. And then on stage, I'm pretty sure in 20... I never shit my pants on stage, but always, like... It's always... I remember, like, one... Like, driving. I don't throw up ever either. So, like, that's... I threw up once, and I had, like, a temper tantrum.
Everybody in his band freaks out because he never throws up. And the one time he did, they were all like,
oh, my God.
We were
in Canada and, like, sushi. Same thing. I, like, got some sort of stomach bug and, like, was driving. I'm like, oh, this ain't feeling right. So I pulled over, and we're in the middle of, like... It was right around, like Thunder Bay. Like, there's just woods, forests. You know what I mean? And, like, we pull over, and everyone's like, oh, my God, what's wrong? So, like, they all kind of, like, pick their heads up and look. And I'm just projectile vomiting on the thing, but having a temper tantrum at the same time because I don't ever throw up. So I like took my shoes off and like whipped them into the forest and like, oh, and then throwing up. And I like ripped my shirt like Hulk Hogan and then throw up. And I'm like throwing my thing. There's puke on my pants. Like I'm sitting there like almost asshole naked on the side of a highway just throwing up. And then, like, get in the van and just no-sell it. Start driving. And everybody's like, hey, man, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And then, like, 4 miles down the road, like, pull over again. And I'm, like, kicking dirt and, like, throwing up. And, like, I'm going to the trailer into my, like, luggage to, like, get new clothes. And I'm like, could someone else drive? And, like, one of the dudes are like, we were going to ask that, but we didn't know if you wanted us to drive. It's like, yeah, I'm going to need someone to drive, man. I'm not feeling too good.
It was, I mean, you didn't shit your pants, but I was going to bring this up. But when he tore his shoulder with the big Stan Hansen clothesline, it was this past December. We did a really cool show in Buffalo. His band, Every Time I Die, plays a Christmas show every year in our hometown, Buffalo, New York. So they were nice enough to let us do. We ran a wrestling show during the day, too. What did we sold out at what?
Oh, three? Yeah.
It was like 3,200.
Yeah, there were a lot of people.
Yeah. Sold out.
Sold out
like 48 hours. Next year's already almost sold out.
Yeah, it's already sold out. Yeah.
But they're playing like the biggest show they've ever played in front of their hometown. And like, I think it was like halfway through your set, you split your pants.
Oh, yeah, he did. My pants split from the crotch all the way to the ankle, like wide open. Show. So I'm just sitting there in my like underwear hanging out, knee braces. I used to wear the Stone Cold knee braces when I'd like wrestle, and then I started nicking my guitars up because I had to like play them. I got two bad knees because I'm 40, and like I started wearing those, but they're like metal. So like I would wrestle in them, and I'd throw like a leg drop, and dudes would be like, "Yo, man, you just caught me like dead on the jaw right now." Man.
Oh
like,
yeah,
yeah. So like I had to stop wearing them. I started wearing like soft braces or whatever. So like my knee, you know, like. the human comes out, like the all look at me and they're like, oh man, that guy's big, he's a monster. And then it's like, what are those? Oh, he's got shitty knees. And then like, we're playing gimmick knees.
Run, yeah. Andy, run. Like,
the show ends and I just rip my pants off, like throw them in the crowd. I throw my like shirt off. I throw my hat off. My shoes go in the thing. And I'm just standing there like.
In your undies?
Yeah, in my underwear. I just go out and I'm like meeting people, just like hugging them and taking pictures.
And this is the kind of stuff when you buy the ticket that there's just like an added bonus.
It's organic.
There's nothing like I'm not like a big proponent of like the, hey, come, you got a meet and greet. And like, you know, the ticket's $20, but if you pay $120, you can meet us. And like anytime you see it, anytime we've ever toured with a band like that, we just got off a tour with Motions Point. I will say that they do something cool. Like they do like a Q&A and then they do like pictures and stuff like that, which I think is awesome. Like you can sit and ask those dudes any question and they answer it. I've been on other tours where like these people pay this astronomical number for this like VIP ticket. And it's like a dude comes out, shakes like two hands and then leaves. And it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just, for me, I've never been like that. So, like, with Every Time I Die, like, we try to keep it like, usually I like the bands we tour with, I'll be in the crowd watching. You want to come up to me and take a picture with me? You want to watch a band with me? Cool. You want to talk about wrestling? I'll talk wrestling all day.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to True Car. Hey, if you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody, even me. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
What's it like for you watching games of your son coaching?
Agonizing.
It's a family affair on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
You know, I didn't know there was actual work here.
Recent guests include Rich Eisen, John Harbaugh, Judge Judy, and John Madden.
I thought one of the greatest jobs in coaching in the NFL was Jim's first year with the 49ers.
Exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet. Get episodes every Tuesday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
Great time to be a Wolverine.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
But I got a question.
Yeah.
Where did the name Every Time I Die come up? Was that the first option?
No. I think the first option was like Dead Heroes. We were going to call ourselves, but then we didn't do that one.
How come?
It was bad.
Because when you think about dead heroes, I mean, how heroic could they have been if they died?
Well, I don't know. You know, there's like people.
Heroes die.
Yeah, of course.
But dead heroes. Did it just not have enough je ne sais quoi to it?
I mean, Every Time I Die really doesn't either. But,
no, but I mean, it kind of catches your attention.
Yeah, yeah. I remember like we had a show coming up in Hamilton, Ontario. First show ever.
Jesus.
Yeah, man.
All these towns in Canada. I mean, yeah. Like that was kind of like
right
a
there.
B-town. Yeah.
Well, you know, Buffalo.
But I mean,
right
Lethbridge,
there.
Like when I was talking with Moose Jaw,
yeah.
Red Deer.
You'll get this. Like if we talked, if we had done an Every Time I Die type podcast, we'll play anywhere.
Right. Oh, man. We wrestled
yeah,
anywhere.
Of course. So, yeah, it was like coming up and like the dude's like, you still don't have a name, man. I got to put something on a flyer. Like, I'm literally just going to, if you guys don't come up with a name in like 3 days, I'm just going to put the Andy Williams Band. And I was like, we can't do that. So
I was putting the heat on.
Yeah. So we're like sitting there and I remember we were in our drummer's basement. This is 1998, 97, somewhere around there. We were listening to this band. This story sucks. We were listening to this band named
Don't Be So Hard on Yourself.
Yeah.
We'll all pop when it's over.
It was this band called Drowning Man from New Hampshire that we all liked. And they had a song called Every Time I Dial. But in the song, like we're listening to it, we're trying to think of like a name. And then like Rat Boy, our drummer, is just, like, literally goes like, it sounds like he says Every Time I Die. Yeah. Maybe we should just use that. All right, cool. And that was literally it. That was like
basically gimmick infringement.
Yeah,
literally. A little bit.
Minus an L.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that was it. Like it was like pressure. And then just was like, yeah, we'll use that for the rest of our lives. I remember like there's, I'll get in these like spells where I just don't sleep. And like I get crazier through the days, but I sleep for like 2 hours, but like the creative juices are going. So like I'm writing or something like that. And I remember this one conversation I had with a manager we had at one point in time where I was like, listen, you got to tell the label, we're changing our name to the Dudes. This is like 2007, 2006. And I'm like, I'm writing a movie right now. So our new CD has to be 3 CDs. It's going to be the movie, the new record, and then the soundtrack to the movie. We're going to write it. Our name is now the Dudes. So like tell the label, and like he's like, okay, I'm gonna let you sleep on this one, and then I'm gonna call you. Yeah, I was like, I'm telling you, man, you gotta get it ready. This is it. We're taking over the music thing. We're the Dudes now. Like just the net tomorrow, we are the Dudes. And he's like, okay, man, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay. And then like the next day he's like,
so
yo, do you wanna talk about the phone call last night? Like, yeah, we're the Dudes now, right? And he's like, we're not going to do that, man. Like, get some sleep. Like, what are you doing? I'm just like, but I'm writing this movie right now. And he's like, you're definitely not writing a movie right now. I'm like, well, I kind of am. I got this idea. You know, I'm going to start. And he's just like, no, you're not. You're not going to write them. Okay, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah, we'll just be every time.
That's the whole thing, though. Like, so when you're kids and you're sitting in that basement and you come up with a name every time I die, you don't, yeah. You're not thinking to yourselves like, oh, we're still going to be every time I die in 20 years.
We literally we thought we were going to do like a weekend of shows with like Hey Breed or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that was it. It was like, that was going to be the highlight. Like, yeah, we'll break up right after. Like Hey Breed takes us out. We play Toledo. We play Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then some crappy other, you know, the like small city. And that's it. We're done. Hey Breed took us on tour. We'll never play with a bigger band. And then, like, fast forward 2004, we're like traveling with like Black Sabbath and you know Judas Priest and stuff like
that.
That's
every time I die.
How was that work with some of the legendary figures in rock and roll history?
Black Sabbath's my all-time favorite band. So,
Ozzy Dio,
Ozzy for sure. Yeah. So, like, I remember like they would open with "Into the Void," which is like my favorite song. And I remember hearing that riff and just crying. The first day, it was just like I'm walking down, and I'm just like, we're on Ozfest, and like I'm gonna see this every day. This is crazy to me, you know? And like, you just don't think stuff like that's gonna happen when you like start out, you know what I mean? Like, it's just wild.
What years were these? Because I used to go to Ozfest when they come through San Antonio, and this is when Zakk Wylde was playing with Ozzy.
Yeah,
you know, I would be in a room, a little bitty room, about as big as this table. And talking to Zakk, Zach's over warming up.
Yep.
All of a sudden, Ozzy was just beating, like the door slammed in my face. He didn't even know I was in there. Okay, Zakk, let's warm up a little bit.
Yeah.
And he starts humming a couple of, you know, words, and Zach's over playing. Okay, Zakk, I'll see you out there. And he goes out.
It's so cool.
It's insane. 2004, we were on Ozfest.
Did you have any crazy Ozzy stories, like him snorting ants or this, that, whatever?
Ozzy was always like, it was right after he had that like ATV accident or whatever. So he was like moving pretty slow. Until he got on stage, and then like I'm sure you've probably had like wrestlers that are just like beat up, and then like they're in gorilla position, just kind of sitting there. But then as soon as their entrance music,
dude, that's the thing.
Boom.
Yeah, it don't matter what you feel like, especially if you're dead dog tired. That's what I've always said, man. As soon as your music hits, boom. It's like boom, you're bulletproof again.
That was Ozzy. You know what I mean? You'd see him backstage, and you know he'd be moving really slow and stuff like that. But then the Black Sabbath, you'd never know, man. He's running around on stage, and it's awesome. So. That was I have a Tony Iommi story because Tony Iommi is my favorite guitar player, and like
wow, what about his playing?
Evil, like just everything he wrote was just hard. You know what I mean? Like,
because the question I asked you about 30 minutes ago, and we segued off before we got back
talking
into
about, like,
it.
Led Zeppelin,
but Tony Iommi, then who else? As far as guitars,
Tony Iommi. I like really nerdy like prog rock from the 70s. So I love like. King Crimson, John McLaughlin, like Robert Fripp, like dudes like that. I like dudes like that, that kind of like, I don't know, they would like write a story within a song. But yeah, like recently it's Steve Hackett. Like I listen to a lot of like Genesis right now. It's like really nerdy stuff, but like I can just like, you know, go into that world and just, and then it's weird taking it to music like ours. So like I'll hear like a not a chord progression or anything like that, but I'll hear like timing stuff that they'll do, and then try to incorporate it in our stuff. And I think that's the one thing that kind of set Every Time I Die apart to all the bands that came up at the same time we were, is like Jordan, our other guitar player's favorite band is Green Day. Like, so I'm the exact opposite of Green Day. Like, I don't listen to Green Day. You know, our singer like listens to like Jeff Buckley and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we all come from different areas. Like when we,
so you're self-taught?
Like, yeah, it's self-taught. I've never taken a lesson in my life. I don't know how to read music or anything like that, but I can like sit and listen.
You can't read music?
No. I even have hard times like with tablatures, like reading tabs is like the easiest thing in the world. Like you get 6 bars and numbers and that's every fret. You know what I mean? And there's times where like I'll read it and there'll be like a squiggly line over it and something. I'm like, I don't know what that means. Yeah.
How did you come upon picking your rig as far as being on stage, and what's that guitar you play?
So like it's changed a little bit over the years. I've always liked to do like something vintage with something more modern. So I used Marshall for a really long time, and I still use. I my favorite amp is a Marshall 800. And then recently I've started liking like Mesa stuff. So like I use a Mesa dual rec, and I use a Marshall 800 is what like my live rig.
What's your guitar?
I used ESP for a really long time, still use ESP. And then I have like a signature model through Belager, guitars out of like this little company out of, Pennsylvania. And they just made me like the sickest guitar ever. They made me like this like crazy, like seafoam green guitar. And then I have like a peach one coming out now too. That's like, yeah, those are like the guitars I like was made to play.
Man, were you ever a Motorhead fan?
Yeah, of course.
I got something for you to watch. I was just talking about it on the podcast the other day. Hi, Kelly. A man, go back to WrestleMania 17 on the WWE Network.
Yeah.
You can see it on YouTube with the qualities of shit.
Yeah.
If you get on the network, it's just crystal clear. And it's 17 when Triple H is going to come out because Motorhead is there.
Yeah.
We were all there in the arena when they did a sound check, you know, that day with nobody in the house. And it was just awesome. And then all of a sudden, you know, here they are live. And Lemmy says, hey, we're Motorhead. We're going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, like, you know, a lot of Motorhead stuff was just kind of like, you know, Lemmy played the bass, but their stuff didn't really have any just bass or bottom into it.
Yeah.
But the way Jim Johnson wrote that song, but you know, the drum, just a lot of bass drum on this. But when they hit, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're playing for about a minute 10, minute 20. Triple H makes his entrance, and then Lemmy goes into that zone. He had his glasses on, but he just starts rocking.
Yeah,
I'm not sure he was high as a kite because he was on pretty much everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was just in such a groove.
Yeah.
It's mesmerizing.
Yeah, man.
That's my favorite entrance that I've ever seen in pro wrestling.
That's really cool.
That was awesome.
We were honestly just talking about that watching WrestleMania 34 with a bunch of the boys.
How sick it was.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Well, go back and check that out. It was just amazing.
Motorhead, I had the opportunity, like Hatebreed did a tour with them. I think it was like 2002, 2003, maybe even earlier than that. They did like a tour with them, and I caught them like 5 or 6 shows in a row. And like my ears... I remember they played in Toronto. Like we went up to the Toronto show, and my ears were like ringing. And then I was like, I have to do that again today.
Because they play super loud,
right? Oh my God, man! Like unbearably loud. I have a great like. There's a story. Todd Youth, who plays in this band called Blood Clot. He played in Danzig for a little bit. He played in something else. I met him once. He used to work at Black Market Music in L.A. And I walked in. I was like, holy shit, it's Todd Youth. And he was like, hey man, like, and I just. It's crazy. Like, I didn't expect to see him there. And he told me a story that, like, Phil ended up, like, his mom got sick or something. And he had to go home. So they asked Todd to come in and, like, cover some shows or whatever. And he said that he got there. They were, like, already sound checking. And he walked out on stage and Lem hit his, like, bass. And he said he dropped to his knees because it was so loud. Like, it hit him. And he was like, whoom. He got, like, he instantly got, like, crazy disoriented and had to go down like one knee because his like ears, he's like, oh my God, I'm going to play this loud. This is insane.
If I ever do you guys podcast, if y'all ever invite me on a podcast, I'm bringing my dog. We'll I'm going to bring a tennis ball to throw and just create as much discombobulation as I can cause. Fuck y'all shit.
Yeah.
Sean's got to work his ass off and clean up all this stuff. I got to ask you, man, because you're just being – I don't like to go to shows. I like being in a show.
I never understood that because like you're friends with Josh Barnett.
Yeah.
And he's like one of my like really good friends.
Yeah.
And there was like a point in time where he was going to try to get you to come to one of our shows when we were like in LA. And then just like last minute, it was like, I think we played like the Whiskey or something like that. And like last minute, you were just like, nah, I'm not going to go.
No, I shit my pants.
Yeah. I mean, if you shit your pants, you're in good company, bud. There's like,
no, my question was, through all the noise, dude, are you wearing earplugs?
No, I've never worn earplugs.
You're doing nothing to protect your hearing? Because I can't hear shit.
Oh, I'm shot, man.
Yeah.
I'm like legit shot. There's like times where like people are talking to me and I'm like, just smiling, like, yeah.
Dude, that's what I do. That's my favorite trick. When we go to a loud restaurant, and it'll be like four of us at a table, and one of us will be my wife, and conversation's going on, and I'm just kind of sitting there, like, I'll try to really work.
Yo, that
and then when the background noise gets to be too much, I'll just tune out, and I'll just do the
I'm
old,
so glad you're saying that.
Like the Prozac smile, just kind of scan the room. I don't hear shit.
I'm glad you just said that, because I explain that all the time. Yeah. Like, when if there's music playing, I'm totally fine. And I think maybe that's because, like, maybe that, like, sound, I'm used to that.
Yeah.
But it's the people talking when there's things going on, yeah. When there's chatter going on, I'm gone. Like, I don't know what people are saying. Like, they're talking to me face to face, and I'm just like smiling.
Yeah. Hey, man, what'd you think about Andy? Man, he agreed to everything we were saying.
Hopefully not asking questions.
And then, you know, if it's something important, like, I was working for, like, Metal Blade for a little bit, and, like, I'd go out and I'd meet people and stuff like that. And like, there was one time where like, Slagle took us to like some restaurant, and like Johan from like Amon Amarth was there, and like someone else, and everybody's talking. And I was just like, smiling, like, yeah, yeah. And it's like, they could have been talking about anything. You know what I mean? At that point in time, it was just like, yeah,
this happy
is
to
great.
Be there.
This is great. Yeah.
She was just looking at me and laughing because like every time My Dad plays our hometown Buffalo, it's like a high school reunion for us, and like, you know, people I haven't seen in years try to come up to me like, hey man, how's it going? Are you still doing that wrestling thing? And I can't hear a word they're saying.
Yeah.
And
he also sticks tissues in his
and
ears.
And then she laughs at me like an old man because I have to stick. So I can't believe you don't wear earplugs. The last time they played, I had to put tissues in my ears.
Yeah, we play really loud.
Yeah,
too. We're like extremely.
I hear ringing for days.
I just never like it. If I wanted to play in my bedroom, I could play in my bedroom. And like, it's a different feeling when you're playing on a stage and like stuff like that. And like, when you put earplugs in, it just feels like you're playing in a bedroom by yourself. Yeah. And it's just, I want to get knocked over. You know what I mean? And that's going to be the death of me. You know what I mean? If it's not getting dropped on my head, it's going to be
loud music.
Me, just loud music.
I had a question for you because Sean, my producer, is sitting right here. We're recording on a new recording system, the Zoom. What is this, Sean? A six? The quality should be great. If you can hear me wrestling with my dog, Callie, other than that, you know, pull this show from. This is 4¾-star. Meltzer ready. Show. I hit you guys at the finish.
I love it.
But you previously handled merch, and you were a tour manager for 3 years before you started co-founded Every Time I Die.
Yeah.
So how big are you into the merch? Because way back in the day, you know, when I finally got hot and started selling stuff at Stone Cold, Kiss was one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like, you know, really not – maybe not the first band to ever do it, but I mean the first to really exploit it and make it a concerted effort to blow up merch.
Yeah.
So, like, how does Every Time I Die do with merch, and what was your experience
really
in handling that?
It's like it's a very, like, team effort on that, too. Like, our other guitar player, Jordan, is an art – like, he does graphic design – or not graphic design. What does he do? He's a
– I saw that.
An illustrator.
He's really good
and
at drawing.
And it's, like, it's insane, man, like, how detailed the man is in, like – so, like, it's all kind of like an effort of, like, hey, guys, I want to do this thing. Okay, cool. I'll find it, get it done, and then, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a team effort with that now. But, like, merch, you have to stay on top of things, because if you don't stay on top of things, you're going to get left behind. So, like, you have to make sure that you're, like, oh, I noticed everybody's, like, right now, like, the big fad is, like, making, like, flight jackets, like, old-style flight jackets with your name on it. And like, okay, well, we're going on tour. Got to have one of those. Okay, cool. You know, you got to get it. You know, right now we have, we're about to like release like a jewelry, like we have like an old English eye that is synonymous with the band, and like some jeweler like made this like one with like a razor blade like built into it. And we're going to start, you know, putting it on sale, you know, just stuff like that. Like, and again, it like goes back to that, like, not VIP type thing, but it's like, hey, we're only doing 100 of these. You know what I mean? So like, for 100, we're not gonna sell these for $1,000. We're gonna sell these for like $60. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
keep the rate down, but make sure that you're not spending too much.
I was watching you on the PowerCast with Mark Bell a couple of years ago. You know, he was talking to you about touring, and you were like, hey, man, it's short attention span theater these days.
Yeah.
If you're not out there, people will forget about
yep.
you. So when are you guys going back out there, and how long do you figure to be able to keep doing this? Because when you look at the Big Four, and then when Jeff Hanneman died from Slayer a couple of years back.
Yeah, blow. That was a big
like,
blow.
How long do you see yourself doing this? At 40, beat to shreds, you shit your pants all the time, halfway crippled, got to get the rotator cuff fixed.
Halfway crippled, 75.
Tackle drop down, hip toss. Hip toss, I don't want to take any bumps.
Yeah, yeah, no bumps. I just punch dudes and clothesline them, and then, like, I'll roll out of the ring. I don't know, man. It's crazy because, like, when you think it's going to slow down, it almost speeds up. You know what I mean? Like, you just – like right now we're going into like 3 months off. We have four shows in like the UK, this like Slam Dunk Festival, Labor Day or Memorial Day weekend. And that's about a week and a half after I'm going to be out of sling. So like I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? Like I had meniscus surgery and then 10 days later I was jumping around on a stage. You know what I mean? Like, so like in my head, it's just go, 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 go. Like I said, now that kids are involved, you know, like kids are like, you know, dudes have children and stuff like that. It's going to slow down at some point and that's okay. You know, we've done it. You know, we've seen everything. We've done everything. And
what do you think the second phase will be? I mean, you're going to wrestle for a little while. You can do that for a little
bit.
You know, the band's going to stay together for a little while. But when that fades off, did you ever think, because here's the thing, like, people are getting in the business. I was just talking to someone about this the other day. Well, it was Shane Douglas yesterday. I never had an exit strategy.
Yeah, there's no backup.
You know, I found my way. You know, I stayed drunk for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I found my way. Yeah. Hell, I'm sitting there talking to you guys.
Yeah.
I went downhill. I'm fucking with you. So have you thought about the second phase?
No,
you're
not
just
at all.
Living here now.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was doing.
I've always done that. And it's always worked out.
See, but you're
out.
Straight edge. You got to deal with that shit right now. I was plastered. I didn't give a shit.
You were in La La Land for a bit.
I was drinking for a living and wrestling on the side.
I guess I'm just, yeah. I don't even know. I don't know. I honestly don't think of it like that. I think that I'm blessed in a sense that things have worked out this long. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird world when you kind of just made everything happen. You know what I mean? Like I've always been a DIY type person. So that's it. The next thing I do is going to be something I do. You know what I mean? It's not going to be me working in an office or something like that. I've just never been that type of person, you know? So screw it. I'll figure it out.
You, Jesse, exit strategy, plans, goals,
nothing. Like I was never really big on like a plan B. Cause I was always so focused on plan A. But like recently, like, I mean, podcasting with him has been like amazing. Like I love it. It doesn't feel like a job. It's a good time. The podcast with him. And then I never had, aspirations on like training guys. Like I've done like a lot of promotions will pay you to come in early and like do like a seminar and stuff. And I always thought it was okay, but we have like a really good crew of like young guys in Buffalo right now. Danny Garcia, Puff, Kevin Blackwood, Kevin Bennett, Anthony Nicometti, Andy. And like just training with, like, I actually do enjoy the thought now of like opening my own school and like training guys.
It's
like,
wild. I bring this up all the time when it comes to like our crew of like Buffalo guys. It's like you'll go to like places and there'll always be like a guy driving with another guy and that's it.
Like
and
from an area.
Literally with us, we have to like tell dudes to like stay home. It's like, oh man, we don't have room. You know what I mean?
Right.
We're like driving up there and like.
Yeah, now usually if there's a show, we have like two carloads from Buffalo like coming. Either guys working the show or young guys trying to get on.
So hungry. And I don't know if you're like this. Like when you get older and you look at younger people who inspire you, it's pretty awesome to not be a jaded person. You know what I mean? When you can be inspired. When I'm inspired, Danny Garcia, the dude he's talking about, like, I wish I was that fired up when I was 18 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just had a different – I was going towards music, not towards wrestling. You know what I mean? But he's so focused, and it's insane to, like, see that. It's so inspiring to just be, like I said, inspired by younger people. Or like,
man, I was inspired by younger people. I was watching all those cats down at the WWE Performance Center, and Kofi Kingston was doing – I think he's deadlifting 500 or something like that. And I was like, geez, I mean, that's good. And then Kofi's strong. And I said, man, you know what? I need to get strong again. And that's when I blew out my left rotator cuff.
Oh, no.
You know what? Don't help young people. That's right. They can still inspire me, but they ain't going to make me do stupid shit.
I think, like, that's one I don't, like, I was going to say this earlier when he was talking about, like, because he comes from, like, a big powerlifting background. I don't know how he does it on the road. Like, for me, like, I'm the exact opposite. I'm more bodybuilding style, like, lighter weight, less rest time, higher reps. Like, and especially on the road. Like, I cannot envision, like, squatting and deadlifting on the road on little sleep and bad nutrition. Like, man.
And so, like, this last tour I just did was, like, it was the hardest. It was, out of 20 years of touring, it was the hardest tour I've ever done. Like, it was just, the drives were unbearable. They're super long. You never knew. The weather was so, like there was no way to, like, oh, we're driving. Oh, there's a snowstorm. Awesome. There wasn't supposed to be, but there is now. And now we're driving in it. You know what I mean? And like, said, you put kids involved, like people have kids, and like the drives just get so nerve wracking. And you get to a place where you thought you had 2 hours, a 2 hour drive that turns into a 4.5 hour drive. You're getting to a place early. You get into town. You try to find something to eat. Like, luckily we get a rider. So I get a rotisserie chicken every day. So I eat an entire rotisserie chicken a day. I'll get to, like, eat something, set my shit up, boom, now it's time to go. You know what I mean? Like, I got to go to the gym, blah, blah, blah. Well, I can't do – there's about 20 exercises I can't do. So that brings me down to, like, I'm working legs, I'm working back.
You stick to the basics.
Exactly. So, like, it's like, okay, well, what did you do yesterday? Yeah, yesterday I did 120 pull-ups. Okay, cool. Today I'm going to do 120 pull-ups, deadlifts, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, and then you're just – there's no inspiration to go to the gym. Like, just like, well, the surgery's going to go and then it's 3 months off. And like you were saying, like, and I think he can probably attest to this, like, I'm pretty psycho when it comes to being me. You know what I mean? So my shoulder is going to slow me down, but yet I'm now trying to find ways where like I can stay as active as possible. And it's like, we have Niagara Falls like right there. And there's like a gorge walk that's like 6 miles.
Oh, you'd be selling that shoulder surgery for a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. It's just in my brain. It's just like, okay, I got to get going. And like now it's like, it's more my mental because I'm always go, go, go. I have to now think of things to keep the ball rolling. And it's like, okay, maybe just chilling out, hiking and just doing hiking, not on crazy things because obviously I can't catch myself if I fall, but like, go do like this gorge walk and try to do it every day and push myself and like time it and be like, okay, well, I did that in 3 hours today. Tomorrow I'm going to try to do it in 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I thought about doing all that shit. Man, I just stayed home and ate enchiladas and stuff like it blew up. It was like, man, all of a sudden, you know, I figured, okay, you know what? You know, I'll just train wheels and train leg press or whatever. But then, you know, I ain't got a leg press machine. I'll show you my little gym right here.
Yeah.
It's a power rack. I don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So then I said, well, shit, piss on it. I'll just, you know, do whatever I can. I'll do one arm curls. I did those for a little bit.
Yep.
But then all of a sudden, you'll notice, depending on how severe you know that shoulder surgery ends up being, dude, when you want to start squatting again, just holding the bar on the back of your neck
back there
is awful.
Oh yeah, it'll mess with you. If you've got a safety squat bar, you'll be able to do that. But man, you won't get in that range of motion just to hold a squat.
Belt squat.
It's going to blow your mind.
Belt squat.
Belt squat's cool.
Awesome. So, like, there's a place right by us that has a belt squat and a safety squat. So, like, I'm going to be okay on that. That, it's just, I don't know the severity of it. You know what I mean? Like, we'll know the 18th when, you know, 17th is
keep me posted. I want to hear how the second part of the story unfolds.
Steve, do you find, like, I mean, like, in your life now and then, like, especially when you were, like, when you were running hard with your run at WWF, because, like, you know, that was, like, you know, you weren't 22 years old when that happened. Like, do you find that, like, trying to stay in shape and, like, training with, like, wrestling is, like, you're just constantly trying to work around injuries, like, in the gym? You know what I mean? Like, oh, my shoulder's dinged up today. I can't do this. I can't do that.
Yeah, man. You know, I was still, you know, kind of bulletproof. I mean, you know, always, you know, little things happen.
Either your knees,
I got knocked on my head, but man, for the most part, you know, just going to weather the storm and just kind of, you're in the grind so much. And, you know, when I retired, I was 38, so I was still very, very young.
Yeah.
But so when I was really, you know, in my stride at 33 to 35, 6, and 7, I mean, it's like, it's really hard to slow you down.
Yeah, makes sense.
That's what I found. I mean, and then, you know, if something happens, you just go light. My whole thing that if I ever hurt something, I just go back and just say I hurt something in my shoulder. Well, I just start off going with a very light military press until I can start going heavy again.
Okay.
So I just get some blood into the muscle.
Some blood flow, yeah.
So, Allie, what's next for you as we wrap up this illustrious podcast? Is there a plan B? You two guys are happily married, try to maintain all that.
Do
you
think
about, you know, how long you have left in the squared circle?
You know what? I never used to.
She's very smart about
it. I never used to. I was, like, so obsessed with just wrestling. You know, I just wanted to be good at wrestling. So that's all I kept. You know, that's all I wanted to do for so long. But now I've, like, started doing, like, acting. So I'm doing, like, acting classes, and I just got an agent. So I'm sort of going in that direction, just because I don't know if I want to be 40 still wrestling. You know what I mean? And I never used to think that way. But now I'm, like, 31, and I'm like, oh, I should maybe.
Oh, no, but, still a youngster.
But at least I'm thinking about it, because for so long I never did, you know. But now I'm like, oh, maybe I should start to dabble in other things to sort of, so I have something else that I can do if, you know, if I can't continue wrestling. You know what I mean?
So, you're 31 and you've been wrestling 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start when you were 16, 17?
Yeah, I signed up on my 18th birthday.
Damn.
So, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, you talk about that 40-year mark, once you get out here in L.A., that starts to get me on the old side. You're leaving one side. Come on, that's my wife, Kristen.
Hi.
How are you? There's a bunch of misfits just came in here with one podcast.
Take over.
So we're about to wrap this thing up.
Yeah.
So
that's what I'm trying to do now.
I do like to put over my wife here for a second. Yeah. It was really cool to see.
This is going
to
be good for the marriage. You heard it first here on the Steve Austin Show.
It was just really cool to see her, like, branch out, you know, like getting out of your comfort zone kind of thing. And like she told me, she's like, I'm going to start taking these acting classes in Buffalo. And I was like, I just figured, like, acting classes in Buffalo, like, if it's not New York or L.A., so it's probably just some ham and egg, or, like, cool, it'll be fun, you know, it'd be good, something different for you, might help with your promos. In, like, less than a month, the guy was, like, blown away by her. She got her headshots, resume, sent it to Toronto, because that's the whole thing with her being a dual citizen. Sent her stuff to Toronto. We went up there. She interviewed. She got an agent in, like, a month. Like, it's just – it's really cool to see that she took the step out of her comfort zone, and it's just, like – you know, she's kicking ass. So
yeah, that's one of the things you got to stay on top of and just keep. I mean, it's like the wrestling business. I mean, you got to stay persistent and keep pushing.
Yeah.
If you sit back and wait for it to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly.
You got to be very pro.
She was doing stuff on her. She was doing stuff on her laptop on the flight here. It's really cool, man.
Well, everybody get your shit in. Where y'all at on social media, Twitter, Instagram, this, that, or whatever?
I feel like we should. We haven't said the name of our podcast yet.
Yeah.
Well, I asked y'all about that and y'all got to remember, I'm recovering from damn near a life-threatening illness. I kicked out so I could do a podcast with y'all before y'all go out there and beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah. It's called Kicking Ass with Jesse and Andy. We're available on everything, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud. Kicking Ass with Jesse and Andy. Drop every Thursday. And
Kicking Ass Twitter.
Yeah, on Twitter it's at Kicking, KICKIN, no G, ASS Pod, POD, at Kicking Ass Pod on Twitter.
Yeah, and we're going to start an Instagram soon.
Yeah.
And what's your subject matter on the podcast? It primarily consists of, I mean, like people say, man, oh, you're a wrestling podcast.
Yeah.
No. I came from the wrestling world, but I don't talk about wrestling all the time.
Essentially, it's a lot of music. It's a lot of music and wrestling.
I
hate to
be put into a box, because you got to talk about wrestling. I talk about just a lot of bullshit.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably don't care about it. But I'm not really a wrestling podcast.
Wrestling, we try the same thing. Wrestling, you know, it's a lot of wrestling based, a lot of music based.
We go see a lot of movies together.
Yeah. You talk about movies, fitness, food, travel. Movies. Yeah. It's like a mishmash.
That's a good shit. Because, I mean, if you got to talk about wrestling all the time, like, you can go rag on a movie or, well, like, I tried to review a movie with my buddy, but I end up giving so many spoilers away.
I was thinking this, though. Like, remember, like, you used to do the where you would watch, like, your classic matches episodes.
Yeah.
We do that with, like, 90s action movies. So, like, we did a whole podcast on To Live and Die in L.A. We're going to do The Last Boy Scout here coming up. So, like, we try to, like, you know, splice it up a little bit here and there.
And then, like, once a month we do, like, we cover one episode of 1997 Nitro.
Yeah, and Monday Nitros.
Yeah, because it's just, like, and it's literally the Wild West. You can do an entire hour-long podcast what happens.
Note to self.
Yeah.
Steal material from Nitro.
Exactly.
Yeah. Allie, where are you at on social media?
So I have Twitter and Instagram at Allie Impact. And then me and Rosemary from Impact have our own website, demonxbunny.com. And we have all our merchandise, videos. We're coming out with a comic book soon. So we have that too.
And you're at, but
at
complaining?
Andy
complain,
at Andy Complains, and then at Every Time I Die. So, yeah, and Every Time I Die, we have Warped Tour coming up this summer. This is our ninth Warped Tour, and then it's the last ever Warped Tour. So we have that, and then, yeah, I'll never stop, so.
Well, I want to apologize for my Black Lab Cali and my Silver Lab.
No,
making a
shame.
We're here into the podcast to wrap this whole ball of wax up.
It's almost like you did the podcast with the dogs, and we were just kind of here.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, they come over here and jack things up for me all the time. Yeah. So, I mean, and it's a free download to begin with. So, I mean, you know, shit, I'm throwing this shit in for free.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is free on top of free. So, yeah, that's very special.
Yeah. You'll take my dogs.
Hey, man. Glad y'all stopped by.
Thank you for having us.
It
was really
nice
of you.
Good news. For the first time ever, the Adam Carolla Show is in virtual reality. Live Saturday, April 21st. Just a one-time $4.99 subscription. And you can see it on your phone or your computer in virtual 360 reality. You don't need glasses, only a web-enabled device. Experience a live show from the comfort of your own internet. It's not going to air as a regular show, so you can only see it in person Saturday, April 21st, or buy the VR download and watch on your favorite device. Get it at podcastone.com/CorollaVR. podcastone.com/CorollaVR.
All right, everybody, give me the go home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast, Ride Off in Sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank Andy Williams from Every Time I Die, Braxton Sutter from Impact Wrestling, and his wife, Allie, from Impact Wrestling. Been a good time talking to everybody. Thanks to my producer, Sean, for rolling by and recording that session. I have just upgraded to a Zoom H6. Haven't got it configured yet, but I'm fixing to upgrade into that. And sitting beside me is a Broken Skull Ranch margarita, because we're getting ready to go to Nevada to go to the ranch, and I thought, hey, it's a great time to bust out a cold beverage, and that is what I'm doing today before I start my scientific slim down, trim down, get buff, carve up some abs diet program in about 2 days. So let me enjoy one cocktail, and I'll have a swig as you listen to me close this podcast down. Cheers. That is indeed a tasty beverage made by yours truly, the toughest SOB in the history of the WWE, stomping mud holes and walking them dry. That's right, and that's the bottom line. Hey, man, all my Broken Skull Ranch t-shirts are still at ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin. Best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA. Problem is, they're sold out or ain't making enough. You can't find it anywhere, and you can't find it at inside the cellar either, because it's out. If you're looking to get a badass pocket knife, though, I've got an endless supply of them. Check out the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife and the new Cold Steel Working Man's Knife. You can get them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin, or just go to ColdSteelKnives.com and check out all the stuff they got. I want to say thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. You can find all my sponsors at PodcastOne.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page, and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Folks, if you want to follow me on social media, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Steve Austin BSR. The BSR stands for Broken Skull Ranch. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of the Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.